This is the Country Hour with Megan Hughes on ABC Radio Queensland.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your company. This week, the weather forecast is rain. And that's certainly been the case so far with some big falls in places like the northwest and in southern Queensland. It's a very welcome early Christmas present for a lot of graziers and farmers, and the rain isn't going to let up for at least a few days. Places in the northwest have seen falls over 100 millimetres since the weekend, and grey skies across the west are promising even bigger totals today. Is it raining at your place? Text me 0487 993 222. Madeline McCosker caught up with Bob Elliott from Belmont Station in between some heavy rainfall earlier this morning.
Yeah, well, it would have started about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, I think. Didn't look like it was going to when I went to bed about 10, but, yeah, it built up and it's pretty much been raining on and off ever since then. Measured about 2 inches or 54 millimetres at about 6 o'clock and there's been quite a bit of heavy rain since, so... Yeah, I dare say we'd be up to about, 75, 80 mil now almost,
And I imagine for yourself and a lot of other people as well that are getting this rain, it's a very welcome early Christmas present. How are you feeling about this rain? Has it come at the right time? Was it needed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, And it seems to be quite widespread, at least in this area, particularly north of us. So, yeah, hopefully a lot of farmers are getting it out here. Definitely needed. I mean, it's the best Christmas present you can get, I suppose. Rain and generally around Christmas time is sort of when you can start expecting some bigger and better falls. Obviously, spring you can get storms and that, but yeah, you don't generally get your widespread rain. So, generally come Christmas, New Year, that's when people are really starting to sort of hope for an early onset of the wet.
What's the forecast looking like for you in the next few days?
Well, the forecast looks like it. Oh, well, it actually looks really, really good, actually. I mean, good. We've got to be careful, though, because, there is a chance that there could be really substantial falls, and we all know what that can do. But, there's nothing too outrageous on the forecast just yet. But, hopefully it'll just keep setting in and everyone gets the rain that they want. Yeah, at this stage, I think the forecast looks like it could go into the new year. So we'll just keep an eye on it. But I think, relatively speaking, I think most stock in most areas are in pretty good condition, thanks to that late March rain that we had last year. The feed had a lot more life in it over winter this year. So, can't speak for everyone, but I think a lot of people, I have heard that their stock held up a lot better this year than their last year.
Yeah, and, there has been a few road closures already in the last few days in that northwest Western Queensland area because of heavy rains and somewhat flash flooding. So there is a little bit of concern around that if the rain does continue and we do get these big heavy falls. How worried do you think people are that that's where this could be going?
Yeah, I think it's always in everyone's front or back of mind, but I mean, first and foremost, we want the rain. We can handle quite a fair bit of rain, sort of up to 200, maybe even 300 mil if it doesn't all fall at once. Anything more than that, and there could be a few issues as there has been in the last few years in some western areas, of course. So, we'll just take it as it comes, I suppose. And I think we'll enjoy it at the start. Hopefully everyone just gets what they want.
Absolutely. And, this kind of wet weather makes it a bit tricky getting around the place as it is so wet. Will this rain change your Christmas plans, or is it going to be a few days in the house over Christmas?
This rain has already changed my plans. I was meant to go to Cairns to be with my fiance's family, but that's not going to happen now, but that's okay. We'll wait till this rain change goes through and we'll probably do a mid-January catch up instead. But I think might be a few families that will have to change plans. But look, it's not a bad Christmas present to get the rain. It's what our livelihoods depend on it. So I think I'll just sit back and enjoy the rain this Christmas.
I'm sure he won't be the only one. Bob Elliott is from Belmont Station near Winton, speaking with Madeline McCosker. And Bob has updated us on his total since last night. As of 9 a.m., he's measured 101 millimetres in the gauge. Let me know your totals if you've been in under any falls this week. You can text me 0487 993 222. Well, Deborah Smith from Limbury Down Station, south of Hughenden, tells Hannah Walsh the rain is much needed after bushfires burned over 2,000 hectares of the property last week.
Very muddy. Very muddy. 97 mil last night till 9 o'clock this morning, and it's just been sprinkling again now.
How much did you need that rain?
I'd had some green pick through my grass, but the after the fires last week, it's very welcomed.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about those fires last week. Lightning was starting fires in your paddocks.
Yeah, it did. It was there was multiple strikes, lit up four of the paddocks, and it all eventually joined together to possibly burnt up to 5,000 acres of country. All our local members. There was about, I think that including my unit, we had 12 units and about 25 people here. And we eventually got it out.
So a lot of burnt country, but how much will this rain help and set you up for next year?
Oh, very, very well. It's very well received. It on that burnt country especially, it'll give it a good chance of getting started again, because this country doesn't take kindly to fires.
Are you stuck at your place now?
Yes. I was supposed to go and get some fresh vegetables and fruit for Christmas, but that's not happening, not today anyway.
Do you think you'll get out before Christmas?
Yeah. If there's no more rain, but otherwise, yeah, it's I won't be moving a vehicle in the
might be today, digging out least, of the anyway. Freezer for your Christmas feast.
I will be. I will be.
Deborah Smith from Limbury Down Station speaking with Hannah Walsh. Had a text come through from Anna in the Maranoa region. Merry Christmas to all, and please remember that a lot of us have not had any useful falls and are desperate for a wet Christmas. That is certainly the case in still a lot of parts around Queensland. Anna, thank you for the reminder, and I'll make sure to ask the Bureau when I check in with them around 12:30 today whether or not the Maranoa region can expect any rainfall in coming days.
Before the sun rises, your local ABC team are starting their day getting ready to help you start yours. We're here to inform you as to what's happening with local news and events. ABC Breakfast, weekday mornings on ABC Local Radio.
On your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app. This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
The summer is producing some of the best Queensland lychees in decades, according to a wholesaler. So yield and supply have been a bit of a mixed bag from grower to grower across the main lychee regions like northern Queensland, the Wide Bay and Sunny Coast. But wholesaler Larry Griffin from Simon George & Sons in Townsville tells Sophie Johnson the quality is exceptional.
Best year I can remember. I've been doing it for so long. Everything just eats so beautifully.
When you say best year, what's that in regards to?
Eating quality. Price probably isn't the cheapest we've ever seen, but certainly not the most expensive. But if it's a lychee, it tastes good this year.
How have you been going with supply?
Supply's been good. Some heavy rain up north has caused a few growers a few issues, but there's plenty of people sending in at the moment. It's just a good year. Go buy some lychees.
From conversations that I've had with various growers in various growing regions, they've reported their yield has been down a bit, but you're saying that supply has been fine. What do you draw from that?
I believe just general demand is probably a little bit down this year, but there are enough growers sending in that there's still plenty around and the pricing is good this year.
Talk about that pricing a little bit more and compare it to where it was sitting at around this time last year.
Yeah, definitely a bit cheaper. What I've noticed this year, there are so many grades. but you can't go wrong with any grades. So, you know, small fruits eating good, big fruits eating good, you know, fan favorite Fazy Zoos, you know, are fair value, probably $20 a box cheaper than last year. And then, you know, your huge Erdon Lees are still really expensive. But I don't know how many people are feeling like they need to go to like an Erdon Lee because the normal fruit is just eating so good.
I remember last year I was buying lychees for maybe like about $25 a kilo. What would you say is kind of that sort of benchmark at the moment?
Yeah, probably depending on the grade. There are so many grades out there. 20 to 25 would probably be a fair benchmark for product. The smaller fruit will be on the lower end, and then the larger fruit will be on that dearer end. You might even be able to get some Fazy Zoos for that price at a good spot buy.
What's the cheapest price that you've seen so far?
I have seen stuff down for $10 a kilo on farm, but that's, you know, your second grade stuff, but still eating beautifully. So if you're not trying to retail it, go nuts. You can't go wrong.
What do you think's driving that demand piece from the consumer, demand being down a bit?
Look, economy, right? Like, we're coming into Christmas, everyone's doing a bit tough. There's talk about interest rates going up. I think that all kind of plays a part into how keen people are to go spend their money.
How long do you think this strong supply is going to last?
Definitely a few weeks. We will see it start to taper off at some point in January. A lot of that's going to be on how much demand soaks up that volume as well.
Larry Griffin, General Manager of Simon George and Sons. But Salvatore Giorgenti's lychee farm in Mareeba, he says some varieties are producing a noticeably low yield.
We have probably 8,000 lychee trees at the moment. Seasons very mixed with varieties low on yield, particularly the better yielding varieties haven't produced this year.
Yeah, so have any been yielding all right?
Probably your B3s, which are your go-to. They're still doing not too bad this year.
How low is the yield compared to what you would kind of hope for from a tree?
We'd be at least 50%.
What's causing that yield decline this year?
Look, seeing other growers and talking to other growers, it's weather affected mostly. You know, long wet season, two in a row, and just, you know, fluctuations, big fluctuations in the weather.
Are other growers in the same boat as you, seeing that sort of 50, only yielding 50% of their trees?
From the ones I've spoke to, yes.
How does this compare to last year? So you said last year was also a very wet season.
Look, last year we probably had more fruit with younger trees. Yeah.
How much more?
I'd say we'd be 50% up on this year.
So tell me about the price then. Do you think the price is an accurate reflection of what's been going on this season?
Definitely not. In fact, I believe it'll start to increase now as bulk of the fruit is probably gone. So, you know, you've got other areas which I believe have been affected as well. Bundaberg, for example, has had some bad luck. The other coastal areas, from what I'm hearing, are wrapping up their picking already. And this area, there's a fair few farmers that have finished already. So, yeah, I feel the price should be going up from here. It probably went down prematurely. It has been a strange pricing this year. So your premium varieties dropped a lot quicker than they should have. And your B3s, your go-to variety, is a bit higher than it usually is as well.
Mareeba lychee farmer Salvatore Giorgenti speaking with Sophie Johnson. Now, changing tack now to one of the biggest biosecurity threats Australia is facing, the H5N1 strain of bird flu. It's a threat to Australia's endangered sea and shorebirds and also to the agriculture industry, and it's a threat with no cure. It's been circling for years, this deadly H5N1 strain of bird flu, and it's now closer than ever. And the international experience proves its arrival will be the beginning of a long fight to contain the damage. Nicole Hegarty reports.
It's a noisy welcome on the Isle of May off Scotland's east coast. This 1.5 kilometre long island is a crucial breeding ground in summer months. Its burrows and cliffs play host to hundreds of thousands of puffins, razorbills, kittiwakes and guillemots. David Steele is the reserve's manager.
We have a third largest puffin colony. We have 52,000 pairs of puffins on this island.
But the cacophony of noise is quickly interrupted by a stark warning, scrawled on an A-frame blackboard. It warns visitors the deadly H5N1 strain of bird flu is still present on the island 3 years after it forced the reserve to temporarily close. Today, before excited visitors are free to explore the wonder, they must step on a wash mat to disinfect their shoes. It's a small extra step to try and contain the H5N1 strain of avian influenza, which has killed hundreds of millions of seabirds worldwide and spread to other animals, including seals and cattle. David Steele again.
We collected over 148 corpses of birds which had just died in the last 5 days.
It's a scenario scientists say is about to become a reality for Australia after the strain was confirmed in elephant seals on Heard Island, a remote Australian territory 4,000 kilometres southwest of Perth late last month. Dr Fiona Fraser is Australia's Threatened Species Commissioner.
Once it reaches here, we will not be able to prevent its spread in nature and we will not be able to eradicate it in nature.
The Australian government has announced more than $100 million in funding for H5N1 bird flu preparedness, surveillance and response. The hope is to reduce its spread and give animals the best chance of survival. But for some species, like the Christmas Island frigate bird, the outlook is particularly bleak. Known for its striking bright red balloon-like throat pouch, it's the world's ninth most evolutionary distinct and endangered bird. Queensland's Moreton Bay Marine Park west of Brisbane is a first port of call for the endangered migratory species like the far eastern curlew.
So it's here on the shoreline we can see some bar-tailed godwits there feeding, probing their long beaks into the mud. There's also far eastern curlew further over, so two endangered species right here.
Professor Richard Fuller is from the University of Queensland and says their long journey leaves the birds in a precarious position.
Far eastern curlew has declined by 80% in 30 years. That is a horrendous level of decline. It's a species that's hurtling towards extinction.
If H5N1 doesn't kill these birds, Professor Fuller says it can cause them to fail to breed. Back in Scotland, a team of dedicated researchers have made a breakthrough. Reserve manager David Steele says some birds are starting to show immunity.
We now know that puffins, Atlantic puffins, are now immune against it and antibodies have been found in their blood system. Other birds are starting to build it up as well.
Promising signs for a species under threat.
That report from Nicole Hegarty. It is 23 minutes past 12. Sun safety for Queensland cattle. That's up next.
ABC Gives has already raised thousands for OzHarvest.
Every cent that comes into OzHarvest will get into hungry bellies.
You can still donate. Visit abc.net.au/gives to donate now. ABC Radio.
On your radio, online and on the ABC Listen app, this is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Queensland is known for its sunshine, and if you've lived here for any amount of time, whether you've grown up here or if you've moved here, you really know the importance of sun safety. You know to slip, slop, slap when you're outside. And this doesn't just apply to people, because in Queensland, feedlots are leading the nation when it comes to shading cattle. A new report from the Australian Lot Feeders Association shows 81% of cattle in Queensland feedlots now have access to shade. And that's a huge jump from 62% back in 2020, only 5 years ago. Looking at some of the figures across Australia as well, nationwide, 75% of cattle now have access to shade in Australian feedlots, and that's up from 56% about 5 years ago. Alpha President Grant Gehry says it's a voluntary move that's paying off, and it's improving animal welfare, productivity and reputation.
We've made great progress. We're up to over 1.3 million head of cattle now with shade, and that's up from 800,000 head back in 2020. So, you know, today we're at 75% of constructed capacity with shade for cattle in feedlots across Australia.
Queensland is leading the way in this initiative. How is it going?
Certainly Queensland's leading the way with in the terms of percentage. It's also got the most cattle on feed. We're up to just under 82% now of cattle on feed in Queensland with access to shade, and that's grown by over 300,000 head since 2020. So it's been a big effort by lot feeders in Queensland.
So looking at the other states, New South Wales is up to 74% of cattle having access to shade. Victoria is on 61%, South Australia 53%, WA 39% and Tasmania 30%. What's behind the differences in uptake? Do we know why Queensland's leading the way?
You know, it's a hotter climate and probably more conducive to having shade installed in the hotter climates where it sort of started, and then it's certainly starting to grow and be used more as well in some of the more southern areas.
So putting up shade is a voluntary initiative, and I'd imagine it would be quite expensive. Why are feedlots installing more shade?
Yeah, look, people are installing shade for animal welfare reasons, to help manage cattle during, you know, heat load events. It certainly brings with it some animal welfare benefits and productivity benefits as well, especially in those you know, difficult climatic conditions. We've seen a lot of R&D in this space over many years that's been done with MLA and Alpha through levy funding. And we've seen, you know, a lot of trials over that time that have shown performance benefits. You know, we see benefits like, you know, feed intake being maintained through hot weather. And we're seeing those sort of things that are really, you know, coming to the fore and you know, allowing people to go ahead and make the investments to put shade in.
In the latest Meat and Livestock Australia shade research, cattle with access to shade were found to have an increase in weight gain of 0.13 kilograms per head per day over the summer period. Now, this equated to an extra 11 kilos of live weight or 6 kilos of carcass weight. Are those numbers significant?
Any sorts of gains that we can get in average daily gain are significant to the bottom line in feeding cattle, so it's certainly providing some good results.
So the northern cattle industry, Queensland, Northern Territory and Northern WA, is dominated by Bos Indicus breeds like Brahman, while the southern cattle industry, New South Wales, Victoria, Tasmania, South Australia and Southern WA, is dominated by Bos Taurus breeds like Angus. Does the colour or hardiness of cattle play a role in all of this?
We see certainly the benefits of shade across, you know, all different climatic conditions. You know, even in the south, the hot weather, certainly on the Angus cattle, we see the benefits. And then again, even through central Queensland, we're seeing a lot of feedlots seeing benefits of shade on some of those more Bos Indicus content cattle are still seeing some benefit.
What is the goal for this initiative? Where do you want to be in 5 or 10 years' time?
Certainly from an industry point of view, you know, we'd like to see all cattle with access to shade over time, and we'll continue to work with lot feeders and do R&D to help underpin lot feeders continuing to install shade where they haven't yet got to do so.
Now, a lot of this work has been done within the industry. Do you think that is enough, or should there be some sort of outside, sort of independent verification?
Yeah, look, Alpha and MLA work really closely together on the feedlot R&D program, and we've had a great relationship working with them for a long time now in this R&D space, and a huge amount of that work's been done around shade and shelter research. And a lot of that research is done by independent universities and other people. So, you know, we've got real confidence in the way that we do the R&D, that it is actually driving results that we can rely on and use across industry to go out and make these changes.
Do these sorts of projects improve public perception of the feedlot industry?
I think that's shown in the Alpha Shade Initiative report that's available on the website. You know, and it shows that concerns about beef production within a feedlot have declined consistently over the last sort of 10 or 12 years, and I think a lot of that's been driven by the focus of the industry to do things like installing shade and making looking after the cattle and making sure the animal welfare's right in what we do every day.
Grant Gehry, President of the Australian Lot Feeders Association, speaking to Brandon Long. Just had a text come through about my earlier story about some of the rain that's been falling, especially in that sort of western and northwest area. George from Toowoomba said only 7 millimetres in Toowoomba. It's very dry and many parts of the Darling Downs are the same. Storms have been very isolated. Let me know what's happening in your neck of the woods. You can send me a text 0487 993 222. Weather's up next. I'll be having a chat to Shane from the Bureau of Meteorology. Then afterwards, I'm going to take a look at fresh fish and prawns for Christmas.
And there's cricket on. Boxing Day cricket returns with the fourth Ashes test between Australia and England. Hear every ball of the cricket all summer long.
The Ashes.
On your radio and on the ABC Listen app.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
And it's time to check in on the weather, and Shane Kennedy joins me from the Bureau of Meteorology. Good afternoon, Shane.
Good afternoon, Megan.
So what's the latest on the rain and storms across the state?
So we still have a broad area of showers and thunderstorms extending from the far north and northwest and down through the central interior into the southeast of the state. And a few lighter showers are for the remaining areas, so mainly to parts of eastern Queensland. And as we just heard, a lot of those thunderstorms are fairly isolated overall, but starting to develop once again. So I expect they'll become a bit more extensive through today. And so there is that potential to see severe thunderstorms with heavy to locally intense rainfall once again, extending from the northwest down into the southeast today. And just a bit of a slim chance we could also see some damaging wind gusts in the southeast. They'd be a bit more likely south of the border, but that may be another watch point. But otherwise, we expect that heavy rainfall will be the primary hazard today and similar for the next few days.
So specifically, I wanted to look at the Maranoa region. Had a text come through earlier in the show from Anna, and she's desperate for a wet Christmas. So thinking around that Roma, Injun, Surat kind of area, part of Queensland. What's that region? Can they expect rain this year for Chrissy?
So expecting that, I'll be seeing a little bit around about now, hopefully, though it may still be a little bit patchy overall. So probably today and tomorrow will be the best chances through much of the Maranoa and Warrego district. And there is that potential we could see some isolated heavy rainfall and those severe thunderstorms today and tomorrow. So probably the best chance that more broadly, still only looking at rainfall mostly in that 5 to 15 millimetre range there today and tomorrow. But if we do get into those severe storms, that's where we could see that 50 plus. But as we just heard, Megan, it still be a bit isolated overall, expecting the heaviest rainfall will be focused a bit further north, but certainly is possible for the next couple of days. But looking further ahead for Christmas, I expect most of that rainfall will contract a bit further north of June. It'll be right on the fringe there, so then probably not too much for the next several days. So fingers crossed for today and tomorrow.
And in the northwest, they've had a lot of rain. What does that mean for rivers? Is it starting? Are we starting to see any flood watches come through, or how's that looking?
So expecting we're starting to see some river rises already there, and we have just issued the first flood watch for northwestern catchments, and so that does go into from the NT and then across to the Nicholson and the Flinders Rivers as well. And expecting that's a fairly long lead time at the moment, just due to the time of year. So trying to give people lots of notice there, but expecting we'll have continued moderate rainfall for several days there with that possibility of some locally heavy rainfall and may even ramp up further later in this week. So there is that expectation we could start to see some minor flooding. And that flood watch also extends down into the Channel Country, so into the Diamantina. And nothing expected there imminently, but given some of those catchments will start to drain far further south over the next few weeks. Just a very early heads up for that region.
When's the change coming through? When is this rain starting to ease?
So not expecting much change for northern Queensland for the next several days there, Megan. So that trough will sit in the south and in the northwest for several days and may even develop into more of a monsoon trough from tomorrow and linger for several days. So there is that possibility of it even ramping up a bit late this week in the northwest. Elsewhere, though, expect we'll have those stormy conditions in southeastern and the southern interior of Queensland for the next couple of days. But that trough should shift north from Friday, as we have a fairly vigorous and cool and dry wind change will push through starting on that late on the Thursday and into Friday. So expect that already settled conditions for southern Queensland for the rest of the week, and it looks like at least the first half of next week as well. And the flip side of that will be as that trough moves north along the east coast starting late this week, so Thursday, Friday, and Friday in particular, as that tracks its way north along the coast, expect we'll see a real focus point of moderate to heavy rainfall moving up the coast, so starting in the Capricornia potentially on Friday, Saturday, and then making its way into North Queensland on the weekend. And that'll link up with that possible monsoon trough in the northwest to really prolong some quite decent rainfall across much of central and northern Queensland late this week into early next week. So apart from South Queensland, Megan, you're likely to be pretty wet and stormy for several days to come.
What does that mean for coastal waters? Big winds and swells?
So is that likelihood late this week? So before then, still sitting under a fairly weak ridge of high pressure. So generally you have northwest and northeasterly winds in that 10 to 15 knot range. We'll expect that'll get a bit fresher in the Gulf of Carpentaria late this week as that trough, possibly monsoon trough, starts to deepen. For the southeastern waters, though, as you mentioned, as we get this next trough sweeping through from Thursday, expect quite a vigorous south-southeasterly wind surge will push up the coast, and so there is that potential we could see some strong wind warnings starting in the southeast late this week, but then making their way north along much of the east coast on the weekend and early next week. And in terms of those swells, it should be probably the swell itself will be a little bit lower, but if depending on how strong those winds are, that might make the overall waves just getting uncomfortably close to that 4 metre threshold for the damaging surf. So it's looking unlikely we'll need a coastal hazard warning at this stage, but it'll be something to keep an eye on. That'll be late Friday into Saturday. It should mostly be offshore, but could see some big waves if anyone's heading further offshore late this week into the weekend.
And how are temperatures impacted this week with rainfall across a lot of the state?
We still have a lingering severe heatwave warning for parts of the southeast, including the Darling Downs and Granite Belt and the southeast coast district. So that should be on its way out at the moment over the next day or two, just with the arrival of the cloud cover and the showers. But it'll still be really quite humid across much of the state for the next day or two until we get that cooler southerly change pushing in late Thursday and into Friday. Elsewhere, seeing quite considerably cool temperatures, particularly in the northwest underneath this thick cloud and plenty of showers. So those afternoon temperatures even pushing up to 8 to 10 degrees below average later this week. And that will likely extend a bit further east as well into the northern interior late this week. So in combination with some increased winds and some really quite heavy rainfall at times, expect that will pose a threat to the livestock in that area.
And what's the latest with the monsoon in Australia? Is it here yet? What's the go?
So right on the threshold, Megan. So I expect we'll have that appearing on our charts from Wednesday is the current thinking, and it'll mostly be across the Northern Territory and just peaking into the far northwest of Queensland as well, starting from tomorrow. And looking further ahead, we might see that extend further east across northern Queensland later this week too, and it'll sort of link up with that coastal trough as it makes its way further north. So still a little bit unknown as to how far east it's going to extend, but it's quite likely it'll bring some increased rainfall to eastern and northeastern Queensland. And at the moment, likely to hang around at least until the weekend and possibly into next week. And that does bring with it the potential for some tropical lows. So still keeping an eye on one possibly developing in the Coral Sea from Saturday. But in some good news there, it looks like it'll very quickly move away from the coast and stay away. So shouldn't have too many concerns on the tropical cyclone front. But regardless, we'll almost certainly have a trough, possibly a monsoon trough, bringing some significant rainfall to northern and far northern Queensland late this week.
Shane, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Megan. Have a good afternoon.
You too. Shane Kennedy, Senior Forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology.
Power outages can occur anytime and could last hours, days, or even weeks. Find a handy guide on how to deal with power outages on the ABC Emergency website.
ABC Radio.
This is the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Thank you for your company on the Country Hour today. Another text through about rainfall totals. They said last night 46 millimetres about 5 kilometres west of Moonee and 75 millimetres about 20 kilometres west of Moonee. If you want to join the conversation on the Country Hour today, talking rainfall totals, what's the weather like at your place as well? Text me 0487 993 222. The Christmas period is always a busy one for Australia's seafood sector, and in Darwin, fishing boats are very busy offloading their catch, just in time to get product into markets around the nation. Matt Brand went along to see one boat that's delivering tropical snappers into the market for Christmas.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Christmas is just around the corner, and I'm down at the Duck Pond in Darwin to watch some beautiful seafood getting unloaded this morning, just in time for the Christmas period. I'm with Michael O'Brien from Australia Bay Seafoods. Tell us what's happening here this morning.
Well, Matt, we're, as you mentioned, we plan our unloads to so we can meet the market for Christmas, so everyone can have fresh fish. This is the third boat to unload this week. We've been supplying the markets all over Australia and especially in Darwin. And this boat here, product will be what people buy off the over-the-counter in this weekend and leading up to Christmas.
Is this the last unload before Christmas?
Yeah, this is the last unload before Christmas. We have a double unload on Boxing Day. So, like all good fishermen, we try to keep the supply regular to the people in Australia, and we work 52 weeks of the year. So, even though it's Christmas and I don't get to watch the opening of the Boxing Day test, we'll be down here unloading fish for the fresh fish for the market to lead into the new year then.
So what's coming off the boat here today?
Well, we've got 85% of our catch is red snapper, which is made up of saddletail and crimson snapper. And then we have a little bit of gullband and a bit of sweet lip and a few other sprinklings through it. But the majority of it is crimson and saddletail.
And how far out has this boat travelled to get these?
Okay, this boat's just come back in. They all do two-week trips. He's been working up on the border on the Australian side, up the top of the Wessels up near Wisteria. So we in Australia still, but out wide in the grounds just inside the Australian fishing zone.
There was a cyclone that came through a week or so ago. Did that mean much to the fisho?
Oh yeah, we plan for it. So we monitor it with two or three different sites. I spend hours tracking it. We had one boat got caught in Darwin. Took us 3 days to get him back out due to rules and regulations. But the other boats, we just moved them further to the east, away from it. And then once it had gone south and started to head southwest, we just moved the boats back in. So we didn't lose a lot of time at all, except for the boat that got caught in Darwin. That was all.
Does a system like that stir up the fishing grounds and change the behaviour for a short period?
Not so much on fish, but on prawns, it does. It normally something like that will slow the prawning down for at least a week until the pressures all come back up. But with the fish, no, I haven't noticed it that much. But earthquakes, we find, upset the fish and make them leave the bottom and go into the mid-water.
Oh, right. So every time in Darwin you feel a bit of a shake because of something happening usually out in the band of sea, you notice that as a fisho of tropical snappers?
Yeah, we do. We notice that the fish drops off. Also, the fish drops off when the tides are really big too. So it can be a mixture of things, but really noticeable if there's a big quake. You notice that normally it's 3 or 4 days before it. And as if everyone knows underwater that it's coming, and us on top just aren't aware of
it.
We just wait. Yeah. Wow. And so as we get towards the back end of 2025, what sort of year has it been for the business?
Yeah, it's been a good year for us. We we brought our new boat in that I'd just spent 2 years making in Vietnam and Haiphong, and it's been here working now for just under 5 months and doing really well. We're very proud of the new boat and how it's working. It's always a tough year. Markets are tough. Environmental groups are tough. Everyone is tough on fishermen. So we're really starting to feel like an endangered species. But we love what we do, and we try and we work hard at a sustainable fishery. So we'll just keep moving ahead, and hopefully 26 will be a better year.
Oh, well, the snappers here today look great. Thanks so much for your time, Mike.
No worries at all, Matt. Thanks, eh?
Michael O'Brien, Manager for Australia Bay Seafoods. And in Queensland, professional fishers are working around the clock right now to land fresh seafood on your Christmas table. Charlie McKillop caught up with Richard Gilmore unloading to a wholesaler yesterday, and he'll be back on the boat off Cooktown to bring in another fresh load on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, the weather's been pretty good, actually. Last couple of days, only been blowing about 20 knots, a little bit of rain, a few squalls here and there, but been very good. The fish have been good. Haven't seen many sharks, so that's even better. And, yeah, the fishing's great, and quite easy to get the product back home and move it on to the customer, so it's great.
So where have you done most of your work this year?
This year, predominantly been working out of Cairns, done a tiny bit out of Cooktown, a couple of trips out of Port Douglas as well, so predominantly work between sort of Cairns and Lizard Island, a little bit north of Lizard Island, but not too much. So yeah, we spread the load. We've got a lot of area that we cover, so it's pretty interesting. And we change up from chasing live trout to all your fresh reef fish like red emperor, nanogai, and Spanish mackerel. So whatever jumps on the line, and if it's nice to eat, we keep it and sell it to the public.
You make it sound like there's a lot of luck involved, but I know there's a lot of work as well. Like, how do you predict when you've got such a large fishing ground? How do you try and keep one step ahead of those fish?
It's probably a lot of guesswork, to be honest with you, but it's just one of those things where you just give it a go, and if something's not working, the joys of being a multi-endorsed fishery is we can run around and try something a little different. So if the sharks are bad, we'll change from chasing your red emperor and nanogai and stuff like that. We'll move over to coral trout or some Spanish mackerel when they're open. But yeah, it's just all about diversity and being willing to move areas fast and try different things.
Just like one farmer moves to another crop, you just shift over, change gears.
That's exactly what it is. It's no different. Just farming the resource that we've got and looking after it, and yeah, having a good time doing it, loving life.
How is that resource looking, Richard? There's been so much conjecture about fisheries management in Queensland, whether we're talking about the inshore net fishers, line guys like you have faced some significant adjustments to the quota and the seasons for Spanish mackerel. How are you seeing it out there, fishing day in, day out?
Yeah, the resource is actually very healthy. There's some fantastic numbers of fish coming out there. We interact a fair bit with sharks and stuff like that. They're probably make us move around a lot more and try and avoid wasting fish, because I hate nothing more than wasting beautiful fish. But yeah, the resource is in good condition. The management, it looks like it's moving in the right direction. With the LNP government, there's been a lot of changes in the fisheries side of things. Things are on the up, I believe, in Queensland, and particularly in the line fishery and that.
So you feel that there has been a palpable shift in the attitude towards commercial fishing? Because so far, there hasn't been too much of a change in policy.
Yeah, I've been involved with some meetings with the department, and there's been a fair bit of change in their direction. There's things coming along. The Prosper 2050 plan is positive for the commercial industry. You know, it's all about increasing productivity and therefore more product to the consumer, so making us viable. It's good. Like, things haven't hit the ground as yet, but they're definitely not far away from changing in a positive direction, I think. I'm a lot more optimistic than what I have been for the last few years, that's for sure, and it's very good so far.
All right, Richard Gilmore, let's talk about the interactions that my listeners and consumers of fresh seafood are most intent on, and that is, what have you brought into port? I'm standing here next to a freezer pack, a freezer that you've driven down the Mulligan Highway from Cooktown yesterday?
Last night, yeah. I did a couple of day trips, and yeah, we caught some red emperor, coral trout, spangled emperor, Spanish mackerel, a whole lot of different varieties, catalog cod or purple cod. Yeah, just all your line caught reef fish that go directly to the public. So it's plenty to choose from, that's for sure.
Nice size fish, Richard. I'm just asking for a friend, you know, about something that would fit nicely in my barbecue.
Well, there's a few that'll fit into your barbecue, but there's a few that you might have to chop up to put in the barbecue. So,
right, okay.
Yeah, no, the sizes, they vary. It's good. But, yeah, the fish populations, they're going pretty good. So it looks good out there.
You're about to hand this batch over to a wholesaler, one of many working hard this time of the year to keep up with the demand that comes at Christmas time. How are the prices looking? You're getting rewarded for the effort out there.
Our prices pretty much stay very similar most of the year round. The price has been pretty good. The wholesalers are working hard, and yeah, retail's going all right too, so it's pretty good.
So what's your message to consumers? Don't come along the day before Christmas looking for a bargain, but you'll get what you pay for, eh?
Yeah, well, we sell bargains, so it's all good. We don't make an offer. We don't discriminate. No, our prices are pretty good, but yeah, we don't have the overheads. Like, I sell directly out of the boat. New Year's Eve, I'll be selling directly out of the boat to people in Coranda and stuff like that. So yeah, but it's just, we just deal whole fish, fresh on ice, so you know it's only a day or two old by the time it gets into your hands. So, yeah.
What about once that last line is pulled in and the last fish is sold? What's served up on the Gilmore Christmas table this year?
Well, probably chicken.
Oh, here comes the rain. Hang on.
There'll be a bit of everything, but chicken, and I'll probably have hopefully some mangrove jack because I love my mangrove jack. And yeah, we'll get some local prawns and stuff like that, which has already been organised. So yeah, looking forward to a bit of seafood, so it's good.
And then back out to do it all again.
Whenever the weather's good, we'll go again. Don't stop, especially while at this time of year. If the winds are down, we'll go and start pulling fish.
Looks like you might be taking your raincoat.
Yeah, there's a raincoat on board, that's for sure. She gets a bit wet at times, but no, it's been pretty good.
Richard Gilmore, thank you very much for giving our listeners something to look forward to this Christmas.
Thanks, Charlie. Enjoy your Christmas.
I certainly will. Now you're going to get wet unloading.
Now I can back it in here. It's no drama.
Great Barrier Reef line fisher Richard Gilmore speaking to Charlie McKillop. Michael texted in, top job fishermen and women. It's a tough job. Appreciate it this way. Have a good and safe Christmas, farmers also. Jim's also texted in on the rainfall report for the Country Hour. He said just near Bloomsbury, North Queensland, their average, sort of annual average, is about 1,000 millimetres plus. But he said this year it's down a bit, and their largest single fall was April 5th, and it's only 15 millimetres. Hopefully we'll get a wet Christmas. Thank you so much for your texts on the Country Hour today. Up next, prawn purchasing habits.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour on your radio, online, and on the ABC Listen app.
Peel your own or pre-peeled? When it comes to prawns, what's your preference? Apparently the answer to that question actually can very much depend on what generation you are, whether you're a baby boomer, Gen Z or millennial. Australians are expected to consume millions of kilograms of prawns this festive season. The Marine Stewardship Council has been doing some research into our prawn consumption habits. Their senior fisheries standards manager, Dr. Adrian Gutteridge, says it shows convenience is proving more important than price or sustainability.
We asked Aussies that question, and yeah, estimating about 18 million kilos of prawns eating over Christmas, you know, which is a fairly substantial proportion of Australia's, you know, annual consumption. So yeah, a lot of prawns. And yeah, some of the other questions we asked them were around their sort of purchasing preferences, and there was a couple of interesting things. I guess first is that, you know, 60% of Aussies will prefer to buy you know, pre-peeled prawns so they don't have to do it themselves, which is something that, you know, my household, I grew up in a place where, you know, you peel your prawns and that's the ones you eat. So the more you peel, the more you eat. But yeah, from Marine Stewardship Council's perspective, one of the other interesting findings was that even though, you know, 60% of people are looking for pre-peeled prawns, only about 16% are actually bringing sustainability into their sort of purchasing sphere when they're going to buy prawns. And, you know, from our perspective, we'd love to see that get higher, because at the moment there's about two-thirds of wild caught prawns in Australia that carry the MSC blue fish tick label. So it's kind of never been easier to buy sustainable prawns. So that's what we're really kind of pushing this year for people to do.
So, yeah, so when people go into the supermarket or the fish market or wherever they're buying their prawns from, whether it's frozen or fresh, there are, as you say, there are a number, a decent number that have that certification that people could be choosing from?
Yeah, that's right. And you can do that in your local supermarket or your fishmonger. And, you know, for people out there, like a thing to remember is your most powerful conservation tool is your wallet. And so the purchasing power you have really sends messages to, you know, fisheries and organisations and companies about what you're actually wanting out of those products. And, yeah, for people, we're just saying, you know, the blue fish tick MSC logo is a really easy way to identify that that prawn or seafood product, whatever it is, comes from a sustainable fishery. And that is, you know, the number one thing we're asking Aussies to do this year when it comes to buying prawns.
So I'm looking at that tick, that label on a fish product or prawns or whatever it is. Yep. Essentially, what does that mean? What is that telling me as a consumer? What's it guaranteeing me?
Well, it's guaranteeing you that that fishery has gone through a really rigorous process to demonstrate sustainability. So the MSC is a third-party independent certification scheme. And to carry that blue fish tick label, that fishery needs to demonstrate three key things. The first is that the target species, the thing that's carrying that blue fish tick, is in a sustainable manner, and it's been demonstrated to be to stay there this generation and generations to come. The second thing is that the impacts of the wider ecosystem are low, such that it's not going to drive potentially bycatch species, for example, into oblivion. And the third is that they've got really strong management in place to give you all that kind of information. So the MSC is sort of the most rigorous independent sustainability certification in the world. So it really is, you know, a really high bar for sustainability and the kind of things that people can be, you know, certain that they're buying from a really well-managed fishery and a fishery that's doing the right thing to kind of ensure that that resource is here, not for this Christmas, but also, you know, all Christmases to come.
It's interesting looking at some of these purchasing trends, and you might think, well, is it a cost thing because of a cost of living crisis? People are still buying prawns, but maybe they're looking for the slightly cheaper option. So they might be some of your more imported varieties, or maybe they're ones that, you know, for some reason, whatever reason, they're not signed up to this program. Do you think that might be what consumers are looking for first?
Yeah, perhaps. And I mean, I guess, contrary to that idea that, you know, the cost of living crisis is making people choose cheaper options, like, it's actually more expensive to buy pre-peeled prawns. So, you know, that kind of shows that the convenience of, you know, not having to deal with, I guess, shells and heads once you get home is probably more factoring in that purchasing thing. But, you know, when it comes to imported versus, you know, Australian wild-caught prawns, you know, the price difference isn't going to be all that much different, especially at, you know, your kind of bigger supermarkets. And, you know, I guess the thing that would differentiate my purchasing, for example, is knowing that the prawns that are Australian caught, wild caught, carrying the MSC blue fish tick label, you know, that fishery is in our own waters. They're really well managed. It's a, you know, fantastic or super tasty. And yeah, I guess if that kind of cost of imported prawns is coming into it, the thing I would just ask people to do is just consider where that's come from and what that regulation might be in another country, because, you know, they're unlikely to be in the same kind of realm that Australia's wild-caught prawns are.
So the message to consumers heading out to buy their Christmas prawns is, well, whether you prefer to peel your own or take the more convenient option, which I'll put my hand up and say, actually go for convenience with the family. It's just, you know, one less thing to do. But, you know, look Australian and look for that MSC label is what you're asking people to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, yeah, just on that prawn peeling thing, like, I don't know, the convenience is good, but I grew up in a fairly competitive family, and so, like, prawn peeling came into it for sure. So my kind of Christmas memories are, like, big bowl of prawns in front of you and you just go ham on it until you can eat as many as you want, and the more you peel, the more you ate. So, yeah, it's pretty good for my kind of, you know, Christmas memories. And I'm trying to get my kids to do the same thing, although, you know, they're not massive prawn eaters yet. They're a bit young, but we'll see how we go.
That's all we have time for on the Country Hour. News is up next. It's 1 o'clock.